to Spain. You put a woman back against the wall. Do it on my own, do it on my own. What you think she gonna do? Do it on my own. I know what I'ma do.
Do it on my own, do it on my own. Do it on my own, do it on my own.
Do it on my own. No, I don't need you.
Do it, but I don't want you.
But I want you.
Hey ladies, welcome to episode 2 of Mommy and Wild Black. This episode is going to be all about wellness. We're going to talk about what it means to mommy while also taking care of yourselves. I also have a special guest on this episode. So if you've listened to episode 1 and now episode 2, you've heard my intro song. It is called Do It On My Own. And our special guest is Miss Tasha. So her mommy name is Tasha Richardson, but she also sings. She is a master juggler. She masters mommying while black. She is the mother of 3 children, and we'll get into that. She also sings. She runs her own business called Fleur de Touch, and she just gets it done. She knows how to get it done. So we're going to now talk to her. So, Tasha, you want to introduce yourself?
Oh, you already did that. Well, let me correct one thing. The business was Fleur de Touch, but now it's just Touch by Tosh.
Oh, okay.
Getting it the vibe. It's just Touch by Tosh because I'm working alone. We'll just leave it at that for. I'm working by myself now.
So, correction, y'all. Correction, ladies. Touch by Tosh. Also, let me back up for a sec to just plug in. So, she does have our business. Thanks for correcting me. It's Touch by Tosh. And she is based out of New Orleans, Louisiana. So, that's my hometown. It's where I'm from. And so, if you're in New Orleans, definitely look her up. She has some pretty amazing reviews. She's also giving massages to some pretty famous people as well. So, you know, that Touch by Tosh experience is one that you don't forget about. She does couple massages too. So I'm going to just leave that right there.
Yeah.
All right. So Tasha, So let's just do a little bit of background. So you are a mother of 3, and what are your children's names, and what do you want to share, like a little snippet about them?
I have Trey. That's my earliest. That's my firstborn baby. He is, oh God, going to be 17 on March 30th. I'm so not ready. Very, very smart. We used to call him Little Einstein when he was a baby because he's just always been smart. That's my easiest child, I think. I have Savannah, my middle child. She is 11, going on 35. That's my diva, my prom child, my 2-bit change, just me all over again. And then I have my baby, who is Sparkle, and Sparkle will be 2. Pray for me on May 21st. And she is wearing me out. And that's just sums up my kids. Sparkle's wearing me out. Savannah's giving me the blues because she's me. And Trey is just still my angel. That's my baby.
Nice.
Always will be.
Nice. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, so a couple things. I guess first to get started. So you are based in New Orleans and you are a single parent, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so, I know that you were previously married, and how long were you married?
We were married for 10 years. We were together for 17 years altogether.
Okay. And I know that I've never been married before, so forgive me for my ignorance. Anything that I ask, you can definitely feel free to, you know, not answer. And full disclosure, everyone, this, we didn't, she has no knowledge of any questions I'm about to ask her. And so, but I want to just have a very honest and candid conversation. So together for 17 years, married for 10. And I'm sure, you know, when you get married, you don't never think that, okay, I'm going to get divorced. So what was that like getting to that place of realizing or accepting the fact that you were going to get a divorce? And how did you come to grips with that in light of the fact that, you know, you both share children, and that means also breaking the news to the children and, you know, also accepting the fact that you're about to go your way, I'm about to go mine.
Right. 3 years now, thinking back, I think when I got to the moment where I was like, this is it, you know, we're done, like, there's no saving this. I don't even think I was sad, and I guess because it was like a build-up, like over a few years. It was a build-up, and it was like I had gotten to my breaking point. And so I don't think I was sad. And then once I finally left, I have to be honest, I just really, really felt free. Like, I just felt free. Like, that's the only way to put it. I just felt free. Like, I think as moms, we hold on for so much longer than we really need to, because we worry about the kids. We worry about them, you know, being sad or growing up in a separated home. Like, one holiday, you got to be here. The other holiday, you're here. Or spend weekends with one parent. So that was a worry for me. But I think so far we've done okay with that. Like, we don't really force them to be with one or the other. Like, we kind of let them make their own choices. So that really made it a lot more easy for me to go through the divorce process. It's never like a, yay, I'm divorced. Like, you never expect to get a think you're going to stay together forever. But, you know, doesn't always work out like that. But I really, that's the best way to describe it. I just really felt free. Freedom. That's it.
I remember, I mean, like I said, I've never been married before, but I was with my child's father for years, several years. And I remember, you know, you go through those moments where you break up and you kind of come back together. Maybe you separate and kind of come back together. But I remember when I, you know, left and knew with a finality, like, okay, this is it, you know, kind of thing. And it was, you know, the reality, like, of getting that key and realizing that this is it. Like, I'm about to take my child from a place that he has a routine at, a normal space, you know, or as normal as we tried to do the best that we could do at that time, and move him into a completely foreign environment, have him to get adjusted and things like that, that it was a lot for me. It weighed on me quite a bit. Like, you know, am I making a selfish decision? Am I making a decision that's solely for LT, or am I doing what's best for Bam? And at the end of the day, you know, you always want to do what's best for your child. But does that mean also that I should be unhappy? Should I, you know, like, am I doing my child the best by being in a space where I'm unhappy? And I must say that when I got to a space where enough time had gone, I don't even know necessarily enough time had gone by, I did feel a freedom. Like, you know, and it was foreign to me because I had been in this relationship or going back and forth with this person for 11 years. Like, you just, you know, it's something that's foreign to you to have to start all over, to have to, you know, whatever. But then when you get out there, it's like this freedom. And I like, and then it's like, man, I don't want to get in another relationship. Like, fuck that. Right. I don't want to be with nobody else. Like, I like not having an answer to nobody. I don't want nobody in my space with my child. It's just me and my baby. Like, you know, we can hang out, we can be cool, but like, you being a permanent fixture around, I'm like, nah, I don't know about that. Cause we already got it, you know, we got a way that we make it work out. So, you know, that being said, though, how I guess my one of the questions that I want to ask you is, you know, how do you, because this is a wellness episode, so one of those things that I want to talk about is, like, just mentally, like, how do you manage a healthy, mature relationship with your children's father?
Well, I think it's a mindset thing. Like, when I decided to leave, I was adamant about co-parenting without all the drama. Mainly because he had a child when I entered the relationship with him. So I watched how him and the child's mother acted with each other. And all I just feel like it doesn't do anything but hinder the child, you know? Like, there's no reason for me. I was done. I was completely done. So there's no reason for me to have, like, all this animosity and argue with you and all of that. It's pointless. So the only person that really suffers when the parents act like that are the children. So I remember telling him this. Like, we are not going to... I refuse to be like that. So a lot of people told me I was crazy and all that because I wasn't really ready to do all of the fighting. You give me this and you better do that. And he needs a haircut, so you the daddy and you have to do that. And you, I'm not doing all of that because for me, as the mom or the dad, you know what your role is and you know what that child needs. So I don't feel like I need to argue with you and tell you what you need to do as a father. Now, if you choose to not do it, and I don't want it to look like I'm bad-mouthing him, but I'll go to my life. My biological father was not there to raise me. But me watching my mother and how she handled that, my stepdad came in when I was 6 months old, so that's my daddy. So my mom has never argued with my biological father. She didn't try to force him to do anything. He chose whatever he chose. So if you weren't there, then that is your problem. Right. And I genuinely feel like because I was a product of that, they end up, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you end up suffering in the long run. You know what I'm saying? Luckily, my stepdad came in and raised me from a baby, so I knew no different. But I have siblings that don't have a stepdad that came in. So I've watched them, you know, deal with things from men because they didn't have that love. My stepdad, I don't even like to even say stepdaddy because that's my daddy. My daddy came in and he's like, you don't have to ask him for nothing. I'm her dad. And I love him to death for that. Like, he, even now, I could call him right now and ask him, and he's going to do whatever I need done, and it's no difference. He didn't treat me any different from my other siblings, and that's how I think it should be. So I think it's foreign for a daddy to not step into that role and just do whatever needs to be done for their child, and I'm just not the mom that's going to try to force you to do anything. You choose to do what you choose to do. Those children will pick up on it, and they will treat you however you treat them. So, like, my biological, it's like, I just kind of feel like he's more like an uncle. Like, he's a family member.
Right.
But I don't look like my daddy. And I would, as a parent, that would hurt me to hear my child say that to me, you know? But, hey, people make their choices. And so I'm not, I would rather us just co-parent and get along and be cordial with each other for the sake of them and their well-being. So that's what I try to do from the moment I left. I try. Everything ain't perfect, but I've tried to be cordial. So, you know, it's not always like that. And I, you know, if it comes down to it, and I'm from Holly Grove, so I'm going to be ready. I'm not going to back down, but I would prefer, because, you know, that's still their daddy and they love him. So, you know, I don't want all of the drama.
So what you're saying is, I'm from Holly Grove, so I stay ready so I don't never have to get ready.
I stay ready. That's, you know, I was raised by people like that. I'm never, like, going back down, but I would prefer that I'm not brought to that place. So I've tried to avoid that. Because they see it. You can try to hide it from them all you want. You can not talk about it around them. Like people say, they kids, they don't need to. They see it. They know what's going on. They're not dumb. So, you know, it's like, it is what it is. We can either get along or you can deal with Holly Grove, Tasha. And it's dumb. Like, who's going to win out of that? Nobody.
Yes. I think that's one of those sensitive areas, like trying to juggle the co-parenting. Like, how long have you been divorced?
think it's about 2 or 3 years now. I stopped counting, but I think we're on 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
I think I moved out in 2017, and I believe we got divorced in 18. I think. I'm not positive. Because I really don't care.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's something. I don't know, girl.
Look, just trying to erase it from your mind.
Yeah.
So I know for my child's father and I, I left in 2018. Yeah, 2018. So I think we officially was like, okay, you know, I said I was going to move out and I was taking Bam with me. And that was in October of 2018. And I think within a week and a half, I had gotten keys or I had signed the lease somewhere. And then I got keys, I think, either right before Thanksgiving or right after. I feel like it might have been right after Thanksgiving that I got keys. And I didn't officially move out until December 14th. It was the day after my birthday. And I think that, you know, it's for me. Well, let me say this. I might be a little bit Pollyanna because I think that I pray. And I pray all the time. I pray for our communication. I used to pray for it daily. And then I stopped. Because I think I got to a place where I was just like, you know what? However we communicate, it's however we communicate. Like, I'm done trying to just keep, you know, trying to make it better. You know what I'm saying? Or whatever. You know, and things like that. Like, I would pray, like, you know, God help us to, you know, or God remind us. Because at first it used to be help us, like help us do. But then that's making it seem like, you know, like we're going to do it and we just need God to help us out, as opposed to me releasing it to God and saying, God, remind us. God, remind to us, bring to the forefront of our minds the reasons why, you know, we fell in love, the reasons that brought us to having a child together, and remind us of those good times so that we can always communicate well, not in an effort to get back together, but in an effort to be the best parents that we can be for Bam, because he deserves that. He didn't ask to be here. He didn't ask to be born into this dynamic, you know, and things like that. But I think one of the things that I have learned is super important is to, you know, understand, and we were very young when we got together, but understand, and I would imagine you and your children's father, you know, you and, I could say his name, Wayne, were very young, 17 years, you know, young, when you got together. And I think that, you know, when you're getting into a relationship, you don't always talk about traumas, people's traumas, the things that they may have experienced in their lives growing up, because those are huge indicators of the person that they are, the things that may come. Like, you might not see that person and what and how they've been impacted by that trauma, because the situation, the right situation, hasn't presented itself for you now to see that version of that person. And I think that I grew up in a household, just talking about me, I grew up in a household with domestic violence. My father was there, but there was violence in the house. There was a lot of cursing. There was a lot of harsh, hard conversations. And I think for my child's father, he grew up in a household where his biological father wasn't there. You know, he had a stepfather that was there, but a stepfather that, you know, treated him different, you know, than the other children. And I say that with the caveat that I'm speaking from what I have been told throughout the years of having been, you know, with him. But, you know, he grew up in a household where it was hard, you know, where he was treated differently. And you know that those things have impacted that person's lives, but you don't realize how much it's impacted till you have a child with that person. Because now you brought a different dynamic to the relationship. It doesn't matter how many years you've been there. It brings a different dynamic. They come with those past hurts, those past traumas, whether we are cognizantly aware of it or not. And so that being said, I pray that we get to a place where we can have a better co-parent relationship, because if we do this right, then Bam walks away with a bonus mom, a bonus dad, you know, and we should show up. And whenever anything ever happens, like, you don't got to deal with one of us or two of us. You got to deal with four of us. Four of us showing up, we on your ass. So I pray that we have that relationship and we get to that place. 2019, surprisingly, was an amazing year. I felt like, for me, co-parenting, like, I thought we was killing it. But then 2020 came along with COVID. 2020 came along with COVID, and it unearthed some things that I thought, okay, we're doing amazing in here. And the funny thing is, the growth is that you think, like, I was like, man, we do great. We have great conversations or whatever. And one day he was like, yeah, we get along because you don't talk. And I was like, what? And he said that. He was like, yeah, we get along because we don't never have to talk about anything of substance. You don't talk. And then I thought about it and I was like, okay, I don't talk. Because I'm just like, if it doesn't have anything to do with Bam, what are we talking for?
I was saying exactly.
Yeah. And then 2020 forced us to talk, because my child's father is in architect, but he's in the aviation industry. So he's always gone, always had been gone. That was one of the things that was, you know, an issue for us. And when a pandemic happened, everybody's grounded, planes are grounded, airports are closed. His industry is impacted heavily by that, by the pandemic. And now I have to talk to you. Now you want to spend more time with your son. And that's a good thing, but that forces me to have more conversation with you. So that unearths the very thing that he said, right? We get along as, you know, we're not talking about anything of substance. And now that we're having more substantive conversations, I'm like, I don't like you. You get on my nerves. And so, you know, and I will always have a love for him because he is my child's father. You know, I will always have an appreciation for him. But at the moment in that space, I was like, I don't like you. And the thing that I realized it was so much is not necessarily, I can't really say now that I've reflected over it, that I don't like you as much as I don't like the fact that we had to have conversations now. Because before it was just easy. You're traveling, you're gone. And then when you come in, you want to see him, I drop him off, I pick him up. That's, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. But now we're having conversations about school, we're having conversations about his hearing, we're having conversations because he had to have surgery. And it's like, I don't like talking to you, because talking to you brings me to a place of feeling stressed. And it's baffling to me because I work in a profession where you talk, you know what I'm saying? Like part of the law is making your legal arguments and everything. So it was perplexing to me that he would not understand something I say. And I'm like, I say this to the court, I say this to all these other people, everybody understands and you don't get it. So it was just like, okay, you know, and so I pray that we get to a place where we can communicate effectively and parent, co-parent effectively to be the best versions of ourselves, the best versions of parents for Bam, and to be able to say what, you know, we may not agree with what's problematic and reach a solution and then move forward from there. So I that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, because when I see, you know, I know some of the inner things that might have went on, you know, in the marriage when I was around. But I, you know, I look at it and it's like, okay, you know, I would imagine at the beginning of the divorce, it was kind of rough, but now it seems like, okay, you guys kind of have an understanding. Like, you know, the kids go over there, when they go over there, you go, you know, whatever. You and Marcia, which is his Jalen's mother, which was the child previous to you and him getting married, you guys have a great relationship now and things like that. So I just wanted to know, which I'm sure other mothers who may be in the same position that I'm in, trying to figure out, you know, how do you co-parent effectively, but you know, from a mature level, you know what I'm saying, of doing that and doing it well. And I know, like you said, which I appreciate, you're not going to always get it right, but the point is to be striving towards that. And I think sometimes, you know, we may forget that.
Right. Sorry, Sparkle, the baby's walking up trying to talk to me.
It's all right.
And the middle one is just looking at us.
It's okay. So let me ask you, go ahead.
In the beginning, easy. I mean, it was when I first left. So I've left before. Let me just say that. In like 2012, I left and I was gone for about 6 months. And I ended up realizing my fault and went back. So I think I could be totally wrong, but I'm thinking this time he thought she left and came back before. So she's probably doing the same. I'll be nice. Like it was, he was abnormally nice when I left the first time. But after a few weeks or a couple of months, I think it started to hit him that, wait, this might be for real. This, you know, this really might be the end. And I think, and we had one conversation and divorce came up because we did start arguing and the issues that we hadn't talked about started to come out. And it was like, I think that's when he realized, oh, well, she's serious. Like, she's really done. So that's when we started to talk about the divorce. And it feels like that's when it got a little bit, which it never got challenging as far as the kids being here or there or whatever. Just our communication with each other. It's like that's when it kind of got, and I just felt like I don't even want to talk. Like, I remember arguing so much that day. We hadn't fussed at all. But that day, I remember arguing and yelling so much and so hard. I literally, when we stopped talking, we got off the phone, I had a rash on my chest that appeared, like, out of nowhere. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, that's never happened to me before. And it was like, I am not doing this. I refuse. Like, I'm not about to stress myself out like it's over. I've told you for years, you know, what my issues are. It just came to a point where this is like, I said these words to him, like, we just don't match because he's 9 years older than me. And I think I wasn't who I am now when we first got together. So I was immature. I was spoiled. I was, okay, you're going to pay all the bills and all that. Cool. You know, that's what I'm used to. That's what my daddy did. So that's the truth. This is normal for me. I'm thinking this is normal. So the first time I moved out, I realized real life, I now have to work and pay bills. I had never had to do that, but I had two children. So I learned, oh my God, like, this is reality. Like, I really have to work and pay bills and I don't have extra money left over and nobody else is going to give me this money. Like, I really, this is not what I like. I don't like this life. So I decided to go back and got a wife. I'm like, okay, I see now where I messed up. I was like, I'm super spoiled. I knew I was spoiled, but I didn't realize, you know, damn, you really are spoiled. So I said, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to graduate. I'm going to open my own business, and I'm going to be a good wife. I'm going to help. I'm going to pay bills. But he never, which he ended up admitting after I left the last time, he never verbalized those feelings. He ended up telling me Katrina affected him in a way where, like, he was so used to always having it, money, you know, being financially okay. Katrina put this fear in him that anything can happen and I can lose everything.
And when we talk about Katrina, sorry to cut you off, Tasha, we're talking about Hurricane Katrina for individuals that are not from New Orleans. Okay, go ahead.
Hurricane Katrina. We ended up leaving. We had to go to Dallas. We were in Dallas for 6 months. We didn't know what was going to happen, if the city was going to come back. But he had never, like, verbalized those feelings to me as his wife. And so, to me, I'm thinking he's acting different, but I'm not knowing why. You're not telling me anything. And it wasn't until I left him that he actually wrote me letters. And he put in the letters, like, I realized I never told you that. I never, and I used to say that. He looked at me, I guess because I was so much younger, he never looked at me as an equal partner. That's how I felt. And that confirmed it when he wrote me that, like, you never did, but at this point it's too late, you know. And that's how it's so aggravating that it happens like that, like, so much, so often. Like, they wait, or not just them, but, you know, people wait until the last minute, and now it's too late. Like, if he had sat me down and been like, listen, I know I've always been good financially, and I know I always handled everything, but Katrina really put this fear in me, and I worry now about losing everything, so I want to be a little bit more frugal. I don't want to go buy a new house, because I complained about the house all the time. I don't want to live here. I want to move. We finally moved, and like 2 or 3 months later, Katrina hit. So when we came back home, we ended up having to move back to the old house that I hated.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had attitude, like, what is happening? But he never told me this. So I just assumed something's wrong, but he's not going to talk to me. And usually that's how it is with a man, especially like an alpha male like him. You know, even though I'm feeling this way, my pride is not going to let me verbalize it, because then I look weak or whatever he felt like he could, or why he couldn't tell me. But that caused a lot, because now I done came back. I done went to school. I graduated. I opened my business. I'm working. And now I feel like I'm a little bit more independent. Why is it still not working? Like, you know, we opened this business and we had this spa, and then he got a rental property and, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe we're supposed to stay together. Maybe he's looking at me more like his partner now. But it's still deep down, it was like, it's not working. No matter what we do, it's just not working. So I just started to look at the fact that I have changed. I have grown up now. I'm not the little, I'm going to say little girl. I'm not that little girl that was there from the beginning. That just, like, everything you say is Bible, and whatever you say goes, and not in a controlling way, because you know Ken about to control me, but you pay for everything, and that I just wasn't fulfilled with that anymore. And I got a little taste of freedom, number one, but also independence. It felt good to make my own money and be the boss and buy stuff if I wanted to buy stuff. And it just felt good. And it just, to me, he's never said this, but to me, I felt like we don't match anymore. Like, that independent Tasha, the one that wants to be a boss and you know, not need you so much, it just didn't work with him no more, you know? And he would never say that to me, but that's how I felt. And it was like, this is never going to work, because he's stuck in his ways. I'm new now. I'm another Tasha. I'm not interested in going back to the other Tasha. I don't want to be her no more. I don't want to be that. So I didn't like to have to come to you when I wanted or needed money for something. I don't like that feeling. I hate to, even though I was spoiled and used to them taking care of everything, it still wasn't a good feeling to have to come to you to buy anything. It could have just been McDonald's. Like, I don't want to come to you and be like, oh, look, I want to go to McDonald's with the kids. And, you know, that's not a good feeling. And when you get a taste of not having to do that, it's like a rush. And it's like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be. And this is what I want my daughter to see. But it just felt like he actually told me before I finished school, he's like, oh, you're starting to get cocky now. And I'm like, wow. Like, because I'm excited that I'm about to accomplish something so big, and I'm going to actually be able to work for myself and make my own money and possibly help out more around the house. And it became, you're too cocky. And it's like, am I cocky? Or you seeing that this stuff is coming and it's happening and you're not going to need me as much anymore. That's what I always, you know, that's what I felt like. And I'm like, this is, I tried, but I'm like, it's not. I knew deep down, I'm like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And I kept saying, I'm not happy. And he would just say, yeah, let's date. And we need to date again. And we need to live. So my guilt would kick in. It's like, you know, the kids need their mama and dad. You know how we do as mamas. Mm-hmm. My children are going to be unhappy. And they need both of us. They need us. But then you think about, well, what happens when they grow up and move out? Then what?
Right.
Then you're stuck, basically. Because now you're too old. You don't even want to go out and try to find somebody else. And then you just settle.
Right. So I think I'm pretty sure there's probably hundreds of Black mothers out there that are feeling the way that you feel. What you said sparked two questions for me. I think I'm going to start with my second question first, as opposed to my first one that came to mind. So you said, one of the things you said was that you didn't want Savannah, your middle child, right? Because Savannah is older than Sparkle. You didn't want, and now you have two girls. So, you know, you didn't want Savannah to, you want what you wanted her to see, you know, how to be a strong woman. What I get from what you said was that, you know, I'm being independent, right? Yes, my father, you know, even though he might not have been my biological father, right? He raised me since I was 6 months old. That's the only daddy that I know. And, and he always took care of me, right? Daddies are supposed to do that. But because you were always taken care of, you got accustomed to, you know, that life. So when Wayne came along and he was doing those things, you're just like, you know, these are the things that my father did. This is what I know that a man should do. These are the expectations that I have. But then you also said that when you got that taste of freedom, if you will, you know, going to school, graduating, starting a business, making your own money, not needing to have to ask for anything, not like you said that he was controlling or anything like that, but that like, look, I can just go, I can pay for things on my own. I only got to consult me. Like these are, that made you feel like this is what Savannah should see. So to that point, that brings me to the intro song, right? Do It On My Own. Is that what sparked you to write that song, to create that song? Like what was going on, if you're okay with, you know, sharing or disclosing those details, like what was going on that made you create that?
That came when I left the first time and moved back. That, because I realized as hard as that reality was for me, I was gone for 6 months. So it only took me a couple of months to realize, okay, yes, your work, and yes, your money has to go to these bills, but guess what? Your bills are paid, your kids have a roof over their head, and they're happy. There's no arguing, you're at peace, and you can do this. Like, you don't need to be with a man to have bills paid, have your kids taken care of. And it made, so I went back because I told you I realized all of that. I realized I had been spoiled and everything. But it was like, but I know I don't have to be with you. I don't need to be with you just to be taken care of. I know now that I'm strong enough to do it on my own. I can do this stuff by myself. I don't need you. Well, as before, I had a fear like, if I leave, what am I going to do? Because that's all I ever knew. Is a man taking care of everything. And if I want to work, I work. Like, I literally would only work for, like, Christmas time. And it was really just to buy his gift. It wasn't, like, because I knew he was going to take my stuff. Like, I didn't need to, but I didn't feel right taking his money to buy his presents. So I would go work some little dumb job for Christmas time, buy his stuff, and then the first thing they did to piss me off, like, I don't need this job, I'm out, I'm good. Like, I know he's going to handle the bills, so I'm only doing this for this anyway. Mm-hmm. So, but deep down, it was like, oh my God, if I ever leave, and now I have children, if I leave, what am I going to do? I'm not going to be able to make it. But then when I actually left, it was like, yes, you can. Like, you're fine. And the crazy thing is, my mother has been independent my entire life. But because my daddy was spoiling me, I gravitated towards that life. And I just watched my mom. I watched my mama get up. She busted her ass every day, went to work, paid bills, came home, cooked dinner for us every night. Like, was at all school, both of them, my dad was there too, but at school events, everything, like they were like those parents. Now they did argue and stuff, but they were still those parents. But instead of me paying attention to how my mom was, I paid attention to my daddy because he's spoiling me. So I could say, daddy, I want to work. When I got a little older, I'm like, daddy, I want to work. I want to get a job. My daddy would say, for what? Like, what you want? What you trying to buy? Like, tell me what it is, and I'll just get it for you. So naturally, you're like, oh, okay. And then when I met him, it was the same thing. So that was my norm. But when I had that daughter, I was like, oh, hell no. Because I also knew how it felt, because daddy never did this to me, but he did. It was like, in so many ways, he wouldn't say it verbally out of his mouth, but it felt like, you ain't going nowhere because you need me. Or spoon feed me like a little, like, oh, I, there was a few times he was like, I'll put money in an envelope for you every week. But it would be like $120. And keep in mind, I might not have been working, but the kids are with me constantly. I need to go get groceries, or I need to get gas. I need to do, and that $120 ain't getting shit done today, these days. But if I run out of the money and I say, hey, I need to get da-da-da, it's like, well, what did you do with that? What did you do with that? That is like the most aggravating shit, because I don't have a drug problem, sir. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not a gambler. Like, I'm literally being the mother of your children while you're out working and doing whatever you're doing. So don't, I didn't like that feeling. Don't question me. Yes, you're paying for everything, but just because you're paying for everything does not mean, like, I gotta, I just didn't like the feeling. So when I had a girl, I'm like, I need my daughter to know this stuff early. I need her to know, if I just work, I can make my own money. And then I don't have to feel that feeling. That was like the worst feeling in the world to me. Like, it was like a control, like a subtle control. Like, he knew he couldn't just be like, hey, you better do, because I'm going back and forth with you. You're not about to tell me to do nothing. I'm not going to do nothing I don't want to do. But financially, since I didn't want to work, or I worked when I felt like it, now I have to deal with that little stupid stuff. Like, you know, because that's where my money was going to come from. I didn't like that feeling. I'm like, for me to have a girl, I don't want my daughter to ever feel like that. So thank God, by the time she was old enough to pay attention, I was graduating. I brought her with me when I signed the lease on my first space for my massage. She watched me sign my paperwork. She was there while I decorated. Like, she would come sit in my office. And so that's her norm. She has a totally different norm than I had. So she started, when I had my spa, she made a video herself and was telling people online that she was going to have a pop-up shop, a slime business that she created. I knew nothing about this. I saw the video. And when I'm like, what the hell? You know, I didn't, who said you were having a pop-up shop? But then I stopped and I'm like, okay, you know what? Let me let her do this. Mm-hmm. And so I did a pop-up shop for all kid vendors. And everybody's always loved her because she has such a big personality. So that day came. And when I tell you, it was so beautiful and like heartwarming, because Savannah had a line. And this was adults too. They came literally to buy Savannah slime just because they saw her online and they saw like she's a kid and she was only like six, but she had a line that from open to close of the pop-up shop. And I was like, oh my God. But it was like she learned that lesson at six. So now, like last year, she did a lip gloss thing. She sold a, she had a goal. She wanted to make $1,000. She made it in one day. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I never had that drive. I never had like, I just never felt like, oh, I want to do this so I can make money. So I can do, I never felt like that, because it was always, I'm going to just ask my daddy. And then when I got with him, it's like, I'm going to just ask him to get this for me. And I was content. But then it got to a point where I'm not content with that anymore. I don't like that feeling. And I don't ever want my daughters to feel like they have to be with somebody or stay with somebody because they need them to take care of them, when you can do it on your own, you know?
Look, so, I'm not mad at us. Shout out to her with the slime, the lip gloss, all of that. Because I definitely didn't have no business at 6 years old.
Exactly.
Making those $1,000 in a day. I'd have made $1,000. I'd have been acting like I was the parent and my parents were the children. Like, who you talking to? I keep these lights on up in this house.
She definitely made that $1,000 like in one day. Like, I was so impressed. And she is constantly, which is a little bit aggravating, but I guess it's just her personality. Like, once she reaches her goal, it's like on to the next. So it was a little aggravating because I had gotten her logo created, I had gotten stickers printed up. And, you know, we got all the supplies and it's like she reached her goal. Now you got everybody excited about this lip gloss. She's like, oh, like, I reached my goal. So that's the one thing I need to work on with her. Like, she'll set a goal, reach it, and it's next. Like, I'm not like that. So I guess that's just her personality. And, you know, I don't know. We got to work with it. But I'm happy that she's not in a place where she's like, can you buy me this? Can you give me, it's like, no, ma'am. You want to get that? You know what to do. You better go sell some whatever you want to sell. Get it for like you, they're going to buy it. I don't care what you sell, spit, and they're going to buy it because it's you. So I'm glad she's blessed with that type of personality and stuff. And she doesn't have to go through needing people like that. Like, even now, I'm working a couple of jobs, and so she helps me with her sister. And so I told them when they, you know, they do their chores and she helps me with her sister, when I get paid, they get paid. So she has now started to put half of her money on the side in her bank. And then the other half, if we go to the store, she'll buy something. But I told her, just stop, because nobody ever taught me about saving money. So I'm still right now trying to learn about saving money. So I'm trying to get a head start, like a jump on that. I don't want them to be, I'm trying to catch up later on in life. So now she's like, okay, mom, I'm going to put half of this here. And then the other half, I'm like, you do whatever you want with the other half. As long as you're putting something on the side, I'm good. I'm happy about that. Because, like I said, nobody talked to me about that. Nobody, and that's I think that goes on a lot with Black families. Like, we just are so into the hustle and bustle of working and paying bills and stuff, we just don't even, you know, a lot of times we get to like the kids are 18, it's like, all right, you're grown, get out.
that whole piece about, like you said, about saving, that's one thing, and that's something I'll talk about on some future segments on Mommy and Wild Black, but that's one of the things that comes up is like, you know, we're not taught how to manage money. We're not taught anything about stocks in the Black community. And so we buy, you know, liabilities, not assets, right? So when you come from a place where you never were able to have or you were poor, you know, you're trying to, I want to be in a position, right? Human nature to be able to buy the things that I couldn't buy. But we don't look at it like, you know, if you buy assets, you can always buy the things you want to buy. If you buy a liability, you can only buy what you want to buy right now, right? You can't do nothing later on down the line. So shout out to you, hats off to you, because it sounds like Savannah is definitely learning, you know, some invaluable lessons early on in life, and with Sparkle following her behind everywhere. Following behind her everywhere that she goes, you know, Sparkle's bound to pick that up. And the way these children come out nowadays, you know, Sparkle will be a level ahead of Savannah, you know, so Sparkle might be buying her first piece of real estate at 5 years old. So, you know,
I'll receive all that.
You never know.
That is a Black young guy, 28. And he's really heavy into stocks. Now, he has his own business. I'm so proud of him because he's young and Black and he has his own stuff. But he is really heavy into the stock market. And he's like, if I teach Savannah and Trey right now about the stock market, they will be, like, good when they're in their 20s. So I told him, like, I'm going to let him come and sit down, because he said the same thing. Like, Black families, we just don't. And he said he remembers somebody mentioning it to him when he was in high school. And he was just like, oh, I don't care about that. But it's like, we just, I don't know why it's like that. I just don't know. But, you know, as
Look,
Black.
When he comes to teach Trey and Savannah, make sure y'all zoom me in so that I could get that knowledge as well, because I need to know that so that Bam can be situated. He's 4 years old. He need to be there too.
We had a conversation one day and he was talking about like, I'm not trying to make this a Black and white issue, but white people, like, they're in high school and they just like party and have fun, or they get in college and they just acting crazy and drinking and smoking and blah, blah, blah. And then when they graduate, it's like, boom. A lot of times the parents like just hand over this business to them and they good. You know, like, we just don't do it. We were so quick. I'm not doing it, but they so quick to be like, okay, you 18, you good. But it's like, if you haven't prepared them, then what do you expect? My daddy says this. He said this the other day, where did I go wrong? And it's like, you didn't go wrong because his dad died when he was like 11, either 11 or 14. And so he had to quit school and all of that kind of stuff. Nobody ever taught him how to be a dad. So he's like, I did the best that I can. And I'm like, you spoiled us, which in hindsight is like, I just kind of wish he would have pushed us to do more. But he said, I did the best that I could. I thought I was doing what's right. And so he really didn't know too much about saving money and all that. But now today, and daddy is 62, he has gotten it together. And when I tell you I'm so proud of my daddy, and it's like it motivates me to, you know, like, I want to be like that. My daddy's about to buy his own house, like, just him, in his name, by himself. Like, he's about to buy himself a house, like, a nice-ass house. And, you know, he's making sure they got enough space for his grandkids. And, like, the daddy, when I was young, that he wouldn't have cared about that. Like, he used to tell my mama, well, you can't take it when you, you can't take it with you when you die, shit. So he's just ready to throw money away. But he's not like, he got, daddy got his credit together. And I'm like, I just wish, well, everything happens when it's supposed to. But if he had gotten all that together when I was younger, he probably would have, you know, talked to us about it. But mama didn't know either. My mama's from Bermuda Island, and my grandmother left an abusive relationship and moved back to the States. And that's how we were born out here. And my mama was the oldest of eight. So grandma didn't have time to sit down and teach her nothing. Grandma was working like 2-3 jobs, trying to take care of 8 kids. And, you know, so mama had to grow up early. So my mom's been working since she was 16 years old. My mom's always been independent because mama knew how it was to be home with kids. So it was funny, is she's a great mom, but she used to always say, I hate kids. I'm not having no kids. But she's the best mama, though. But, you know, she was forced.
Shout out to Mama Sonia. Shout out to Mama Sonia real fast, you know, with the food, her food, everything. Just, and you wouldn't think that I wouldn't have even known that without you saying that, because she's so nice and so bubbly and so motherly and so, you know, hey, you better watch out for that. That's my daughter, you know, and all of that. So you wouldn't think that, but, you know, shout out to Pops too for, you know, 62 years old. It's never too... Plug. It's never too late to get started. It's all about a mindset. You change your mind and then your actions line up with it. And so shout out to Pops for that. I definitely want to talk about you know, managing stress. And I'm gonna ask you how you manage stress. That's one of my questions. But I want to talk about Touch by Tosh for a sec, because I think that a lot of times, and I learned something in prepping for this segment, this episode, because when I think about relaxing and managing stress, I think, oh, I'm going to go to the spa, right? Apparently I'm uppity, because that's not what people of color do. They don't go to the spa. They don't go get massages. So I'm like, what you mean they don't go get massages? Like, so I'm just, you know, researching and I'm learning so much or whatever. So, you know, I think that, like, okay, most people choose to manage stress by getting a massage, right? White people choose to do that, right? Black people in the black community, we don't go get massages, right? For us, massages are considered to be something, it's a luxury, right? And a lot of times, especially for mothers, you know, or even whether you're mommying single or, you know, in a marriage, right, that's considered a luxury, and we can't afford to go and get a massage. So we don't ever partake in those types of activities, which, you know, like I said, I wasn't aware of. So I was doing some research, and the National Center for Health Statistics did a report back in 2012. They also did a report, they also did a report in 2017. However, in 2017, they did not focus on massage therapists. So I choose not to acknowledge that report in this episode. Right. But in 2012, they did a report and they found that Hispanic and non-Hispanic Black adults showed a decreasing pattern of using what they refer to as complementary health approaches, which massage is one of those things, while non-Hispanic white adults had an increasing pattern of use. So I want to talk about that, right? So I have some questions for you. First thing, I know that you, so I also take into account before I ask that, that you live in New Orleans, right? A city that is predominantly Black. So in going to massage school, was it predominantly Black? The other therapists?
No, it was not.
Okay. Okay. All right. So what year did you graduate from school?
Graduated, I think, in 2013.
Okay. Massage school. Okay. And how long is massage school?
If you go during the day, it's like 9. Well, I went to Blue Cliff College. It was 9 months. And I went during the day, so it's like a full day of school. If you go at night, I think it's like 15 months because the hours aren't as long. So you have to go longer, you know, more months. But I did the nine-month program during the day.
Okay. And in that class, what were the demographics then? Because I would have thought that it was predominantly Black considering it's New Orleans.
I'm thinking about it. We might have had, trying to think of my face. I'm putting faces in my mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm maybe 1, 2, 3, 4. We might have had 4 or 5 Black people in the class. And I think 2 of them left, like midway through. They didn't even stay.
Okay.
So it was 5 of us.
Okay.
But keep in mind there's multiple things going on, you know, at one time. So my class was that class from a certain time. Then in the evening, I don't know what they had in there. So, but okay. My class was like 4 or 5.
4 or 5 Black people in your class. There was multiple classes going on. And 2 or 3 people dropped out. So let's say it was 2 to 3 Black people at graduation. What would you say was that for that class? How many people were in that class in total? Approximately.
I don't know, only because there's different programs and we all graduate together.
Got it.
I don't know. I would literally have to go back and look at pictures or something like
that's
that.
Okay. That's okay. That's okay. All right. So now that you've graduated, right, what are the demographics of your clients? And let me be more specific, right? How many of your clients are Black mm-hmm. as opposed to how many of your clients are non-Black?
So when I had my spa, I was running a group home. Worst thing ever, like, I wouldn't advise that, like, because, so when I did the Groupon, the majority of my clientele was white, okay? And Groupon, the whole purpose of Groupon is to let you try out a business, pay a discounted rate, and then if you like it, the goal is for you to return.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them would do it, but they were, like, Groupon hopping. Like, they would just buy that cheap one, and I'm not tooting my own horn, but most times when those clients came down, they would literally say, oh, my God, that was the best massage I've ever had in my life. But because they didn't want to pay the regular price, they wouldn't return. That was so annoying. Now that I'm not in the spa and I do mobile, all of my clients are Black.
Mm.
And that's crazy to me. But all of them are Black.
Okay. And then let me ask you this. So are the majority of your clients men or women?
I have a mixture. Most of the men are when I do a couple massage. I don't have too many male clients, but I'm finding there's not a lot, but there's a few that I just kind of am hesitant by being a mobile massage service. I find, like, a few of them will follow my personal page, And so they might see me going out one night. So now I got makeup on. I might have on a tight dress or, you know, and then they'll hop in my DM like, hey, I want to book a massage. And I'm like, nah, you just saw me post this picture. That girl is not going to show up at your house. Like, that's not who's doing your massage. Like, that's two separate people. I'm showing up with my glasses on, with my hair in a ponytail all bun, with my massage t-shirt, some pants and some tennis. Like, I'm not going to have makeup on. And I just feel like some of them are looking at this fantasy, right? Like, they think this girl is going to show up at my door sexy and tight. Like, no, she's not coming. So I will, like, for instance, I just had somebody who bought a gift certificate from Christmas. And he was trying to book it. And I'm like, okay, cool. We can do this date. Give me your address because, you know, so I'll know where I'm going. And he responded and was like, oh, I don't live in your area. So I was going to just rent a hotel room. And so did you have any that you could, you know, tell me, you know, what's a good hotel? I immediately like,
yeah.
No, what live in? He's like, I live in, I forgot what he said, but it's like 2 hours away. Now I'm really like, okay, you're going to drive 2 hours, pay for a hotel room, just to get a massage. And I told him that. I said, this time, I'm sorry, but this sounds crazy to me. And I'm not in your. And he's like, well, I was just trying to support. And, you know, you always talking about how you the best. And, you know, who doesn't want a massage by the best? I said, I'm not trying to say you crazy, but this sounds crazy to me. So I'm going to go ahead and send you your money back. I can't try. You know, I just didn't have a good feeling. So that's the downside of me doing mobile because, you know, walking into a spot is less likely to be on some bullshit. But the mobile thing, I'm coming to you. So most of my people are women. And if it's men, it's usually in a couple thing. Because, you know, some of the men, they look at massage just like, I don't really, you know. A lot of people do think that too, black people, I found. They like, I don't want nobody rubbing on me. But they really don't understand the benefits of getting them a regular massage. They don't, a lot of them don't understand that.
So we're going to segue into that. We're going to segue into that in just a second. So in 2020, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics indicated that 83.6% of the women in the massage therapy business in the country, that 70% of them were white. So I found that particularly interesting because not only do black people, we don't get massages enough, right? And so that's going to bring me into that point where you talk about understanding the benefits of massages, but we don't get massages, right? We deem it as a luxury, or, you know, we don't get it. Maybe even it might be a thing about transportation, right? Because from what I looked at, most massage therapy places are not in predominantly black neighborhoods, right? It's not some place that I can walk to or go to, even if we're talking about the lowest end of it, which is massage envy, in my opinion. So that being said, I think that that's a huge piece there that plays a factor. What are the benefits of getting regular massages, right? And what I want to do is sort of pigeonhole you a bit. I want to talk about what the benefits of getting massages are, but what are those benefits as it relates to black women? And let me say this. I know that for, like, I only have one child. I have a four-year-old. That's my only child. I'm still in love. You know what I'm saying? Like the novelty of my son hasn't worn off, right? But I have friends that have children and they're like, I'm going to kill his child. You know, like they're going to kill me or I'm going to kill them. You know what I'm saying? Or like, you know, like I'm almost here before putting the keys in the ignition and driving off into the sunset, leaving all of them here at this house. Like I don't know these people. I'm never coming back. So they can have all my shit. So I'm like, you know, that place. And I think for a lot of Americans that when the pandemic took place. So when the pandemic took place, one of the things that really happened was, you know, schools shut down, right? Schools closed. Now parents are at home with their kids. They're working from home. They're there all the time. These kids are driving them nuts. Like, you know, you have a new appreciation for teachers because you know your child, but you don't know your child at school. So like, now your child got to be doing their schoolwork at home. You hear, you see, this how you act with the teachers? This how you act? You know, and they driving you nuts. You still got to cook. You still got to clean. You still got to be a wife. You still, like, oh my God, I still got to work. Like, these kids is driving me nuts. You hear them in there. You know, all of these different things. And one of those ways to sort of escape without being able to escape is going to get massages. But when the pandemic started and states started shutting stuff down, massage therapists are not deemed essential workers. Now, I beg to differ. I think that, you know, you guys are essential workers, because if you don't let me go to this place, I may kill this child, right? So let me, this is essential for my sanity and for y'all too, because y'all don't want to have to come down here to no crime scene. So what I want to talk about is, like, what are the benefits of getting massages, right? Especially in light of the fact that, you know, which is a whole different thing that I'm intrigued about. The fact that, you know, you mentioned that a lot of people came with the Groupon were white, but then when you stopped doing that and you started doing mobile, it's Black people. But what are the benefits of getting massages?
It's like, okay, I'm thinking about this because I haven't had one since before I got pregnant. It reduces stress. So most people get the hour, like 1 hour. As a mother of three, now my oldest is not a problem and he's never been a problem, but those two girls, just to have that 1 hour of peace and quiet is like heaven. But there's another thing. Like, you might do your job. You might sit in front of a computer all day. Like, the way you sit, the way you sleep, all of that plays a role in the way your body functions. And most people come to me and their tension and stuff is in their shoulders and neck and all that. You build up these knots, because that's what everybody calls it. I got these knots. And just to get, like, those knots can cause, like, migraines. Like, I used to help this chiropractor out. I've had people come and they, like, are willing to, like, ready to go pay all this money to these doctors. And not saying chiropractors and them are not real doctors or whatever, but they don't even realize that just to get those knots worked out or even broken down a little bit can just reduce so much pain. Like, I've had a girl came to me, she could barely stand up straight. And when she, I did her probably like 2 hours, like she needed it. And when she got up, it's like, oh my God. And they don't understand. Sometimes a tight muscle may be pressing on a nerve, right? And so you think, oh my God, I can't walk. Like, something's wrong with me. Now you about to go spend thousands of dollars at the doctor. They'll prescribe all of this medication, and it could just be tight muscles. Tight muscles could be from sitting down all day, not moving around enough, being in a bed, especially with this pandemic, people not working, sitting at home. Holding your child on your hip all day. My arm is right now, my whole upper arm is like sore because this girl won't let me put her down. Just those little things, it improves your circulation, helps you sleep better. When we do the massages, we like pushing toxins out your body. So most times when you get off the table, we'll say drink a lot of water for that reason. And then, like, if you have alcohol before you get on the table, it will make you feel more drunk. when you get up, but people are like, wait a minute. It can help lower your heart rate. It helps with your blood pressure. Like, it's so much. I'm just thinking about being on the table right now. I did two massages yesterday. I have these. It's a couple, and they call me. I go every other week. Like, they are like, listen, we need a standing appointment. Like, we can't. They can't. People. I love when people understand the benefits because they really do look at it like, I'm not paying money for that. All you're doing is rubbing on me. And it's like a slap in your face because I went to school for this. Like, I had to graduate. I had to go through all of these hours. I had to take all these tests. And it really is beneficial. Like, I can't even, a lot of people just don't believe. If I can just lay down for 2 hours right now, I'm just thinking of how.
So I think that, like, it is funny you said that piece just real fast about the whole alcohol, because we had some storms in Houston about 3-4 weeks ago, and the weather was really bad. The lights went out. It was ice, everything. I ended up suffering a rotator cuff injury and injuring my back. And it was so bad that I, like, to walk, it hurt. And so yesterday, my back was really hurting me, the lower part of my back. So I went to this float spa. And they do cryotherapy and hydro massages. And I drank some daiquiri yesterday because I was feeling like a New Orleans hot girl. I had my crawfish, my potatoes, my corn. And so I called my, I rolled up. I was like, I was going to get me a 24-ounce daiquiri. Then I got to the window. I was like, nah, what's hot girl shit? What do we do in New Orleans? We get gallon daiquiris. So I said, change that hurricane to a gallon. So she changes it to a gallon. And I come home, I eat my crawfish, and I drink my daiquiri, and I'm feeling my daiquiri. But I also was going to the spa. And I felt like, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to my best friend. I was telling him, I said, man, I feel like you're not supposed to go to the spa if you've been drinking. And so, but they didn't ask me nothing about that. So I went and I did the hydro massage, and I did that because my back had been hurting so bad that I was just afraid of someone putting their hands on me that would make it worse. So I did the water, and it was starting to feel better. But when I got up, I felt like, whoo, what in the world is going on? I felt like what the hell? And I drove back home. And I was driving and I was talking to him. I said, man, I feel off. I don't know what is going on. Like, I sat in my car for the longest time because I was just like, you know, I felt off. And I was sure it was from, you know, the alcohol, like you said. So that's good to know I wasn't tripping. That's right. You know, with that, because it had me something to drink, I was like, all right, I'm going to let myself sober up and then, you know, go. So I want to talk about this. So in September 2020, CNN Business had reported that approximately 60% of businesses that closed during the COVID-19 pandemic would not reopen. And then in February of this year, Fortune magazine, so I like to read Fortune and Forbes, like snippets of it, not snippets, but certain select articles, let me say that. From Apple News. And so Fortune magazine reported that nearly 80% of 346,000 workers that vanished from the American labor force in January of this year are women. And so to make that plain, that's 2.3 million women, 2.3 million women, right, that worked, that have, that, you know, are, they've completely vanished from the labor force. Now, that did not get granular with the statistics in terms of talking about what percentage of those women were entrepreneurs. However, we know that a significant number of Black entrepreneurs or small business owners last year shuttered their doors and weren't able to reopen it. So I want to talk about Touch by Tosh, right? So how was that, right? Because COVID-19 caused a disruption, right? Again, like we talked about, you're not deemed to be an essential worker, although I argue differently. You know, how was your business impacted? How were you able to survive, navigate that thing? And I'm wondering, because you're uniquely situated in that you are mobile, right? Even if it shuts down, you know, even if you say, you know, we shouldn't be outside, I'm going, you know, like, you know, you may not be essential in terms of walking into a brick and mortar place, but I am able to walk into people's homes and do that. And then what does that look like?
I actually just a couple of months ago started doing massage again. Like, I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't touching anybody. And I had a couple of massages scheduled right before COVID hit because it was March, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So bought gift certificates from Christmas. And of course, they wait till the last minute. They were expiring in March. So I had a few people scheduled, and I had to text them all and tell them, you know, clearly everyone sees what's going on with COVID. And I just finished those massages probably 2 months ago because I'm not trying to take any chances, you know, I'm not going in anybody's house. So I literally just stayed home. And, you know, the Lord made a way. I don't know, because I wasn't working. I was not. I just wasn't. I didn't feel safe. I didn't want to bring anything back to the kids. You know, they were home. So I just was like, well, that's it. I'm just not going to work. And so I just started working again right before this Christmas, because the thing you say, how people are stressed out and everything, they were stressed out because of the pandemic. So this year or last year, the Christmas, almost everybody that bought gift certificates booked them right then. Normally they will buy gift certificates to give as gifts. People were buying them and using them. Like, I need to book it right now. So I have been like super busy the last couple of months. The deadline just passed. So thank God I'm done with the gift certificates. But I was like killing myself through December and January because people were stressed. Like, they hadn't had massages. I heard of the couple I just said that have standing appointments. They used to have a regular massage therapist that they would go to. She stopped. She closed her doors and she stopped. She's not doing it anymore. So now I'm their therapist. But I just wasn't doing, I just didn't feel safe. And it was just like, well, you know, I will be fine. And we were, thank God. But I didn't take any chances. I wasn't risking it with the kids and stuff. So
had you thought about closing Touch by Tosh?
I am actually currently thinking about it because it's been like 8 years and it's very taxing on my body. But right now I moved to Slidell, which is 30 minutes from New Orleans. And most of my clients are in New Orleans. So now it's like the commute is getting to me, to driving back and forth. And then I got the kids home. So I'll have to leave. You know, I don't like, I'm not liking it. It's like just getting to be inconvenient. And then I don't know how other cities are. I've heard Houston, well, Texas was way better when it comes to people paying for the services that they want and they don't complain. But I'm finding that even though I have some regulars that are willing to pay, there's a lot of people that in New Orleans that just don't want to pay. They just, I don't know if they expect me to just charge like $20 or, but it's like, listen, my stuff, my service is very beneficial. And I'm not going to like leave these children, you know, make them babysit their sister, drive all the way to the city and all that, but not like, and work on your body. You know, it's still a pandemic going on. For nothing. Like, you know, so it makes you feel like unappreciated. So it gets a little annoying. I got my regulars and they like, please don't quit. So I think I'll keep doing them. But like, I've gotten 2 work from home jobs because I'm really contemplating like just kind of giving it up. Like, I'm just, when they make you feel like that, it's annoying. And surprisingly, it's a lot of well-known people that don't want to pay. I don't want to say any names, but, you know, my brother was like, no, maybe they, like, they don't reach out to me for the massage. One person in particular, 2 people have reached out. And then when I give them my price, which is very reasonable, it's like they don't, the conversation is gone. Like, they don't talk no more. But my brother's like, well, maybe they're waiting for you to say, oh, well, if you advertise for me because you have a big following, then I'll do it for free. Well, no, I didn't come to you. If I want to advertise with you, I come to you. So I'm not like, and you're a celebrity, so you should be able to pay this, right?
It reminds me of that episode from Martin where he didn't have no job, and he was like, they called me, and it was like, bruh, they called me though, like you want me, you want Marty Mart, you call me.
To come fix your wife, but you can't pay my little one. But, and the funny thing is, they literally just posted a thing. They posted a meme saying, rest in peace to all the conversations that died after I told them my price. And their caption was, I know my worth. And I had to comment underneath. I just put, ha, like, it's funny you say that. Like, really? I was so like, I can't believe this person posted this. Like, you literally did the same thing to me. when I gave you, you come to me and then I give you my price and it's like, all right. I'm sorry, Spock was here.
It's all right.
Yeah. Drink. Okay. Go, Bubby, give her her juice. Go by Bubby. But I just was like, wow. Like, the fact that you posted this and you charge, well, I've heard the prices are ridiculous. I've never needed their services, but you couldn't pay my price, though. And you, and the conversation died after I gave you my price. Piece because you know your worth, but am I not supposed to know mine? Like, I don't. And it's just a very annoying, and it happens a lot in New Orleans, and it just makes me so mad because I just feel like it's raggedy, but I just feel like our city is, like, so dope, like, the culture and, you know, how different they are and stuff, but they just, I don't know. It's making me want to move. I still don't know if I want to do massage even when I do move. I'm just getting burnt out.
It's a mindset thing, I think, in New Orleans. I think one of the things that, like, you know, for our culture is, like, that whole, like, oh, okay, you done got your degree, or you like this, so, hey, I need a hookup. Like, and be like, no, I got a family to feed. I got somebody to take care of, too. Just because I went to law school and I passed the bar don't mean I'm going to do your legal stuff for free. Like, I got to eat. I took out student loans. Like, who about to pay for these? And I think it's that sense of entitlement, like, thinking, like, okay, you should give me the hookup. I'm like, okay, but do you give me the hookup? And it'd be those same people who don't do any of those, extend any of those same favors, you know, to you. But I think that, I think one, hey, Sparkle. Hey, girl. I see you. I think that one of those main things or that you need is, like, you ain't had no massage since you had Sparkle. So first you need to get you a massage because you might be trying to close them doors because you salty because you ain't had one. So you probably need to get you one. What you need to do, like, Britt be touching everybody's face. I'm sure Britt knows some massage people. You need to get with Britt and then get you somebody.
But we just, all of us are constantly doing massage and making everybody else feel good. So it's like when you're home and you don't have to do massages, you like, I'm tired. I don't feel like doing it. And for me to get one from one of them, I have to give them one. And I know how they feel. Like, do a massage all week. I don't feel like doing it now. So we just keep saying, we're going to do a trade on each other. But we just never get around to it because we all have kids. And once we're off, it's like, I just want to sit on my sofa and just watch TV. I don't want to do anything. But it's starting to catch up to me because my shoulders and everything is, like, super tight. So I'm really ashamed to say that I'm a therapist and I haven't got one, knowing that I really should get one.
Hi.
Hey. Sparkle, you going to say hi to everybody? Say hello.
Say hi.
Hi, pretty girl. All right, so we're getting winding down to the end of our segment. So I want to use this opportunity. I'm going to ask you one last question, but I want to use this opportunity to thank you for coming on. Thank you for my intro song that just always spoke to me from the minute I heard it. So thank you. I greatly appreciate that. But thank you for coming on and just allowing me the opportunity to talk to you and ask you pretty much whatever I wanted to, unfiltered. And I know that, so one, don't apologize for Savannah, Trey, Sparkle, anybody in the background, because that's how it is. Like, you know, mommy, we don't get an opportunity to turn it off. Like, we always have to be on 24/7, 365. So there isn't an opportunity to turn it off. And one of the things with this podcast is I want it to be raw and the most authentic, you know, version. So you know, so thank you again for allowing us into your space. And I want to finish up by asking you one last question. So you have three children, your oldest of which is about to turn 17. Oh my gosh, the end of this month. And so Look, Trey about to turn 17. Heaven's about to turn 17. Like, who told these people they could grow up?
I'm so scared. I'm not.
It's
awful.
That look, the minute that I saw Trey with a mustache, I was like, who told you that you could grow a mustache? Like, who told you that?
Trey is still like a gentle giant. Like, he is still the same old Trey from, you know, My Baby. Like, he's never changed. He just got bigger, you know, like, he's real tall, but his personality and everything is still exactly the same. And I love it. Like, that's my aim. That is my angel.
Nice. And so at some point on the episodes of Mommy and Wild Black, you listeners will hear a song called Angel, which is also by Tasha, that she wrote about Trey. So but I think there's appropriate segments for that, so I'm hanging on to it. But I want to ask you, so like I said, you have three children, your oldest of which is 17, and you've been Mommy and Wild Black for a hot minute. What is the most important lesson you believe, the single most important lesson you believe that you've learned throughout this process?
I think I've learned that you have to, all your kids, you can't, like, be the same mom with all of your children. So, like, I say that because, like, when Trey came along, even now at 16, about to be 17, he was the easiest child. Now, he had he was a little hyper, but nothing over the top. You know, never was a problem child. And so when I used to look at him, I used to be like, oh, my God. Like, I got this. This is so easy. Like, I can have five more of these. And then Savannah came. And it was like, oh, my God. That mama for Trey is not going to work for the mama. Savannah's got the bathroom looking at me. Mama cannot be here for Savannah. Like, Savannah is a whole different ball game. Like, and then Sparkle's a different, like, you can't be the same mom. You can't expect all of your kids to be the same, you know, and don't compare them, because it's pointless. I think that's my biggest lesson. Like, I thought it was just super easy. Trey made it so easy, and I always say the Lord tricked me, because if I would have had Savannah first, I would probably be a mother of one. I love them all a lot. You know, everybody who knows me knows I love the hell out of my kids, but she still gives me a run for my money. Oh, my God. She is like, my mom used to say, wait till you have a daughter. You just wait. Because they all talk about my attitude. And when I tell y'all, she gave it right back to me. And I think that's my biggest thing. Like, I got tricked. It's not. So that was, like, and pick your battles. Pick your battles. Like, that was the other lesson, I think. That's most important. You got to pick your battles. Don't, you'll kill yourself trying to just fight and fuss for every little thing. Like, the kids are going to have their own personality. Even if it's close to yours, they still have their own thing. So, you know, you got to pick your battles, because they are who they are. Just like we are who we are. Like, you can't forget that you were once their age and you did the same stuff. Just pick your battles. Stop and think back to when you were that age. I have to do that a lot, because otherwise I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to lose my mind, y'all. Y'all pray for me.
So it's funny. It's so funny to me listening to that. And thank you for sharing your sage advice. Because you say, you know, you feel like the Lord tricked you, because if you'd have had Savannah, you'd have only been a mother of one. But Lo and behold, right? You want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Then here comes Sparkle.
Through birth control and everything. She was going to be here whether I liked it or not.
but you love them all. You love them all.
I cannot. It's funny because when me and my brother say this all the time, like when you have kids, you can't remember life without having the kids. Like if you sit and think, it's like, it feels like they've been here the whole time. That's so weird to me. Like, we've always said that. It's like, you can't imagine life without them. Life, even with Savannah, my love, my two-bit change, Jesus. She says to herself, life would be boring if I didn't have Savannah. I'm thankful for my baby.
Look, I say that all the time because I'm pretty sure you know, too. And Wayne knew it, too. Like, I was like, I'm not having no children. I ain't having no children. I ain't getting married. Like, don't look to me to carry on the family name, son. It's the buck stops here. Don't ask. Don't ask. Don't. I don't care if the world is in danger. The human population is in danger. Unless I procreate, we dead. We dead. And then, you know, you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And God blessed me with Bam. And I cannot imagine life without him. Like, I'm like, what was life like before you got here? I'm like, what? The only thing, when I look back at my life before Bam, things that I remember is like, my dad passed away. I graduated from law school. I passed the bar. I was here. That's it. What mattered? Nothing mattered before he got here. And so it's just like everything completely, you know, shifted, turned my world upside down. And I am forever, eternally grateful for Bam because he has molded me into the mother that I am, the mother that I will become as a result of it. He has taught me how to be resilient, how to be patient, how to love unconditionally. I thought that I knew what it was to love unconditionally, but.
Not until those babies get here. And that's what the other thing, as much as I make fun of, you know, I make jokes and stuff. Savannah is the child that made me like, you got to get your shit together, ma'am, as a woman. Trey was my baby, but that was a boy, and it was my baby, and that's it. That's just my baby. But when she came, it was like, okay, now you start thinking of how you were, like how, the spoil thing and the attitude and all that. And it's like, I don't want her to act like that. You know, that's what I remember telling Savannah one day, and me, her, and Wayne were in the yard, and I was like, how can you be so beautiful and be such a handful? And he turned his head like the Exorcist. Like, and that's what I ask myself about you all the time. And it's like that moment, I was like, oh my God. Like, I really, it made me realize at that moment how much I had, you know, like, I've just been over the top all these years. Like, I've been spotting care before when people say, oh, you spoiled. Oh, I don't care. So, yep, and. But then when she got here, it's like, oh. I'd have been that cute. You got to get yourself together because, you know, now you got a girl. She's coming up behind you. She's going to watch you. So, you know. I owe that to her, me trying to get myself together.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, before our segment ends, I definitely want you to share your information, if you want to, about Touch by Tosh, because it sounds like you might be going out of business. I don't know, so. So, if you want to share anything about Touch by Tosh, you can, but I'm going to leave that to you to let the people know if that's what you want to do.
I'll say this. activated my massage page the other day because I was like, you know what? I just had gotten so frustrated with these people who reach out and they want so much and they just don't want it. Like, it's, y'all don't appreciate it. Like, y'all don't. So I've really been like, I'm going to just do my regular clients. I'll keep doing them. And if you need, you know, I guess if they're listening to your podcast, then they obviously can, you have information or they can reach out to you or something on your
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. If they like, oh my God, I need this right now. I can't, you know, I can't walk or something. I'll give you my stuff to get to pass along.
And say, say less. Okay. So, sis, if you out here and you listen to this podcast and you are based in New Orleans or Slidell and you need a massage, you in dire need of a massage, but you're willing to pay for the massage, then you got to pay and no discounts. That's what she said. Hey, Sparkle. All right, so feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. My page is Mommy Ing. Mommy Ing while Black, BLK. So Mommy Ing while BLK. Or you can also reach out to me via email at momgoals@mommyingwhileblack.com. And I'll definitely forward your information on to Tasha and she will touch base with you. I can tell you that you're not going to get a better massage than, you know, she has. And she's been very modest. She has not name dropped any celebrities that she has, you know, given a massage to, but she has. People have come into New Orleans for Essence Fest, things like that, and have sought out her services specifically. So I can definitely tell you, you will be in good hands. But like I said, check us out on social media. We will be posting there regularly and going live. And again, Tasha, I thank you so much for coming on. I thank you for sharing Sparkle and Savannah and Trey, you know, with us. And I know Sparkle left, but she got to come and tell everybody bye. You know, we got to.
Tell everybody bye-bye. Come say bye, everyone. Come on, hurry up. Say bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. 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 All right, Tasha, thanks so much. And I look forward to, we'll touch base in a live segment. We'll do one where it's like a Q&A, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
All right.
Take care. Bye.